to Common Law. This is your host, Arthur Beislein. I hope you all are out enjoying this beautiful, finally spring day. I was just commenting how I didn't know why I was in such a great mood this morning. Just felt better. And then I realized, well, that's because the sun was out. I could actually see the mountains that are behind our beautiful little town. Before I forget and we go to our break, I want to mention something about, it's about my chiropractor. And I'm only bringing it up because he was a client of mine like 19 years ago, and he asked me if I went to the chiropractor, and I said, no, maybe like some of you, they scare me, twisty and cranky on my neck. That just scared me. And I told him that, and he said, oh, well, you should come see me. And so I went to see him, and it was like nothing. It's hard to even explain what it is. It's not acupressure or pressure points, and he's not waving sage around your head that's on fire. But it's like nothing that I knew even existed in the field. And it's got a name, and he explained it to me. But the first time I went and saw him, I was about 260 pounds. And, you know, I'm 6 foot, almost 6'2". I was a big person then. And he was doing this weird stuff to me. And I'm going, that's not going to do anything. Well, then it did. And it was actually pretty miraculous. But I'm only bringing it up now because I have had ear problems my whole life. My left eardrum has a hole that won't heal, and my left eustachian tube, you know, that's where you blow air up to clear your ears, it doesn't really work. And I haven't been able to hear even with my hearing aid for like the last 3 months, and I mentioned it to him like 2 weeks ago. And he said, oh, well, what's the problem? I said, well, my eustachian tube doesn't really work, and so I can't really clear my ears, and I don't know what's going on. And he goes, and then he tells me, a chiropractor can adjust eustachian tubes. And I said, well, you've done some weird stuff that's worked before, so let's give it a go. And then he said that it would take a couple of sessions before I'd notice anything. And after the second one, I had been clearing my ears better than I ever have in my entire life. And I've had multiple surgeries on this ear, and it's never worked like this. And his name is Mark Cochran. He's down in that brown building. That little funny office building, atrium-looking thing on the corner of Pine and Fourth. But if you're at all inclined to think maybe some that would help, but you don't like those, the ones that do the cracking and twisting, you might consider him. But other than that, nothing new to report. I think the last time I talked, I'd had a whole bunch of trials. I haven't had any of those since. I do believe the last time we talked that I mentioned how this Fox News lawsuit with Dominion was not about liability. It was about how much money, because I told you, and which was really the point of what I'm telling you is when your own news station admits that they're lying to you for ratings and they know it, if that doesn't bother you, that it probably should. So yeah, that's why they settled for what, $787 million? I can't remember. That number's never even been on Fox News. The closest they came was some Fox News reporter saying, well, we heard it settled, but we can't get independent confirmation. Do you think maybe the Fox News anchor has an inside at Fox News? I don't know. Maybe he could have picked up the phone. But anyway, and that's not the end of the trouble for Fox News. They've got other lawsuits against them and everything else, and that's what you get when you lie to people to make money. So they're really getting their comeuppance, and I am really glad about it. And it was a wise decision to settle, because then otherwise Rupert Murdoch was going to be on the stand saying, why did you say it was okay to lie to your viewers for money? And then his answer would have been tough, really tough. So anyway, this is Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein, and you can email me at commonlaw7b@gmail.com if you have any questions. And we'll go to our first break and be right back.
Pace Kirby Insurance and Real Estate has been serving Boundary County for over 100 years, and they've built their reputation through good service, honesty, and stability. Come to Pace Kirby in downtown Bonners Ferry for insurance of all kinds, life insurance, supplemental health, and also Safeco Auto Insurance. Pace Kirby also sells real estate, including acreage, both large and small, farms, timberland, and creek and river property. Call 267-3123. That's 267-3123 for Pace Kirby, when experience counts.
More than a dealership, Findlay Jeep Superstore is celebrating savings. April is Findlay Jeep Superstore's one-year anniversary. That's a whole year of super savings on super inventory from the Inland Northwest's only standalone Jeep Superstore. Join us during Finley's Jeep Celebration event, and you too will have a reason to celebrate up to $10,000 in total savings on a new Jeep Gladiator truck, or celebrate with up to $6,400 in savings on a 2023 Jeep Grand Cherokee L Limited. For example, stock number J23279 has over $1,400 in Finley discounts, $5,000 in factory rebates, plus you may qualify for an additional discount like a military discount of $500, first responder $500, conquest cash $500, or returning lease $2,000. Get into the most luxurious vehicle in its class, the new Jeep Grand Cherokee, for the absolute best price available. Celebration savings all month long. Hurry in for best selection. Visit Finley Jeep Superstore in Post Falls at the I-90 Autoplex, or view inventory online at finleypostfalls.com.
Welcome back to the quickest podcast ever, brought to you by Kohl's.
Today's topic, Mother's Day.
If our mom's taught us anything, it's how to find a great deal.
So true. That's why I hit up Kohl's Friends and Family Sale. I saved 20% on gifts for my mom, like a pair of PJs. Plus, I got Nike sneakers and her favorite Sephora finds.
She's one lucky lady.
She deserves the world. Hopefully these gifts are the next best thing.
Great gifts and great savings. Your mom will be so proud.
Select styles. Offer ends April 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles, with an auto warranty about to expire, or with no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy, CarShield is announcing a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is now available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Yes, you heard that correctly. Pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for all drivers to call for a free, quick quote. Call 800-736-6158 now. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Call us for your free quick quote today. 800-736-6158. That's 800-736-6158. What do you have to lose? Call 800-736-6158. Again, 800-736-6158.
Keep up to date on everything we're doing at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Welcome back to Common Law. I am your host, Arthur Beislein. I want to talk now about something I think I tried to jam in right at the end of one of my shows, and I had to do it too fast. And something near and dear to my heart, which is the traffic flow in our town. Now, I must confess before I start my little plan that the city apparently is up to something. I'm not exactly sure what. There's apparently an open house on Thursday at the library to inform the public about some big traffic plan. And I think there's maybe one of the councilmen will be down at the Evans Brothers place that same evening. But I don't know what it is. My suspicion is to tell us what's going to go on with the curve, because I know that the city has bought Dubs, I think, expressly for the purpose of being, then they're the ones who will negotiate with the Department of Transportation when it comes to condemning Dubs. I think there's actually a plan to pick it up and move it or rebuild it or relocate it. I don't know. But either way, Dubs is going to go. That Dubs was going to go the last time they tried to do this curve. So I suspect that's what it's talking about. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that your downtown could not be set up any more dangerously when it comes to a traffic flow situation. Traffic safety engineering is pretty straightforward. You try to avoid two-way streets at all costs if you can. And you avoid turns and too many crosswalks and blah, blah, blah. And obviously what they're doing down there is creating all kinds of problems. My first suggestion would be, you know, that snarl that always occurs right there at Bridge Street, Church Street, and First Avenue. Generally, when somebody is coming south on First, or a whole bunch of people are coming south on First and somebody wants to turn left on Church and they can't, and so that backs up that way, which then backs up the bridge. Or the opposite, somebody wants to turn onto Bridge coming south on First and that backs up everybody up on First. And so how do we avoid that? And having that two-way street from Church down up First Avenue also creates that sidewalk or crosswalk that's right by the Cedar Street Bridge, somebody's going to get hit. I mean, there's just, it's unavoidably going to happen. So here's what I would do there is I would make church or First Avenue right past church a one way going north. And it would not, and it would stop being a one way at Second. And so if you wanted to go back downtown, you just go down Second and make Second through Street. Right. So you don't have stop signs until you get back down to Pine and then loop around that way. And that way, then what you could also do is you could get rid of all that parallel parking and stick in more slatted parking. And you'd still have more of a wider lane and make it a nice 10 mile an hour speed limit. I mean, you really shouldn't be cruising gut unless you're going to go shop there or work. Ideally, you wouldn't park there if you're going to go work. But I understand that's an issue also. My other idea is this, and I think you've all seen this one happen. Before they rearranged our roads, remember that light there at Chevron? When you're heading west on Cedar Street, you come to the stoplight at Chevron. Well, forever and a day, that was always the center lane was left or straight, and the right lane was right turn only because the most people want to go right. Well, when they redid things, they switched it. So the right lane is straight or right, and the middle lane is left turn only. Hardly anybody wants to go left. But if one person wants to go straight in the right lane, well, now you're backing up traffic. I've seen it. It happened to me the other day on a Thursday morning at 8:30 in the morning. There was cars had to leave a gap so I could get across 4th Street. That is like the worst possible situation you can create with what you're doing. And I heard a rumor that the DOT said that's what they were going to do because we shut down the curve or what, you know, when they wanted it back in the day. I didn't care about the curve. They say I had something to do with it. I'm like, I just wanted you guys to reroute our roads. You had everything you needed to do it right when the bypass was done. Why did we wait 4 years? And so that needs to be switched. Now, I've actually reached out to the city and to the Department of Transportation. Said to the city, you know, this is, you guys need to switch these, go back to what we used to have. Oh, we can't do that. That's the Department of Transportation's light, and we can't make them do anything. Well, now that's not true, ladies and gentlemen. The city can and should be doing anything they want to make the Department of Transportation make your city safer. They can. There's a statute that gives the standard of how the department has to operate. They just can't come in and run roughshod over your town without regard to anything that is how what they're doing is impacting you. So then I got a hold of the DOT, and you know what they said, the Department of Transportation. I said, oh, well, that's how the city wanted it. I mean, he went that way, right? So we just need to, you know, just reach out to this, your city council or whoever and say, demand that this be switched. You know, I told the city I'd do it for free. If the DOT gives any blowback about that one, I'll do it for free because that is just flat, stupid, and dangerous, and now everybody knows about it, and it needs to be fixed. Now, the other one that would involve the DOT is we do not need left-hand turns for every single road off of Fifth Avenue as you head north or south on it. You don't need it. You need one turn. You can turn on Cedar, or you can turn at one of the other roads and backtrack if you forgot to turn on Cedar. But we don't need those other turns. And I know you've all seen what those create, which is somebody who's not from here is in the wrong lane and then just jumps lanes to get into the right lane. And that would eliminate all of that. And then what that would also do is if you made all those roads between ideally Pine Street and Cedar right turn only, meaning that you could only come out of there and go right. So you could only go north on Fifth. You didn't have to get across Fifth. You could only go right or just no access at all. But if you did that, then you could put slatted parking on all of those roads also because they're no longer two-way roads. You just go down there and you park. If you had a right-hand turn, you wouldn't have to create a turnaround. So you'd have more parking. And that would be something the DOT, because that's their corridor. Fifth Avenue is part of the highway, so they have to sign off on whatever we want to do. But again, the city can make them. Their highway right now, it is what's going on is, because I've been really upset about the road stuff for about 10 years. And I know that what went on and why it is the way it is because everybody wanted two-way streets back like it was when I was a kid. Well, when you were a kid, there were a whole lot less people. And I understand listening to your constituents, but that's what we call the representative democracy, meaning you make the decisions. You know, you listen to your constituents, and sometimes the ones who are willing to speak out sometimes don't always have the best ideas. And, you know, that doesn't mean anything other than you have to make the decision. And if they don't like your decision, then they unelect you. So punting to your constituents saying, well, that's what everybody wanted. Well, no, you got to think this one through. And what they did is very dangerous. And the last thing, and that one, this one's a pretty complex. I actually asked the DOT for this weird little interchange, you know, where you can't turn left on Pine and Pine is a one-way street until it gets to Fourth and you got to go in the big block circle thing, whatever. I sent them a Freedom of Information Act request and I said, I want to see the traffic study or anything that shows us that that is safer than just reconfiguring Pine Street so it is a two-way street and putting the lights down there. And I didn't get any answer, but I did get a phone call, and they assured me that that was the case. And I'm like, that one, you know, I got to find an engineer who will volunteer to help me with that one because, you know, that one's a little more complicated. So, but that's what I think would help our downtown immensely. You would eliminate all those traffic snarls. You'd create a lot more parking. And one other idea that people just think I'm completely off my rocker about is you've got this city beach with all this parking and you've got this little old restaurant down there. Now, what do you think somebody would pay to rent something that the city owned that they built the suit for a restaurant down there where that thing is now? And everybody's like, that's crazy. You can't do that. Well, where that thing sits, you know, that parking lot's almost never full, clear over there, and it'd be a great way to generate revenue. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that we develop the city beach. I'm saying you've got something there already. Why not make it a little bit better and generate a lot more revenue for the city? Because that would be, you know, and you do it on a long-term lease. And then if they, you know, leave, you get prepaid and you just rent it to somebody else. I mean, I think it would be obviously a pretty hotly sought-after space to open a restaurant. Anyway, I think we're coming up on our next break. This is Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. We just talked about traffic flow. If you don't do anything, just demand that they at least fix the light there at the Chevron so the right turn, the right-hand lane heading west is right turn only. Anyway, we'll head to our next break, and we'll be right back.
Selkirk's Pend'Oreille Transit is your convenient and free local bus transportation. Hop on the spot stop nearest you. Hours are 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. with 40 stops 7 days per week serving Dover, Sandpoint, Kootenai, and Pend'Oreille. The map, schedule, and light bus tracking is available at spotbus.org. They are following FTA cleaning guidelines, keeping spot passengers and drivers safe. Again, visit spotbus.org to see spot schedules, map, and bus tracker. Selkirk's Pend'Oreille Transit is your convenient and free local bus transportation. See you on spot.
A beautiful garden starts with quality plants, and the best plants are grown with love and care at the Flower Farm north of Sandpoint. The Flower Farm is open for the season and jam-packed with perfect pansies and heavenly hardy perennials ready to plant now. Plus, pick your gorgeous hanging baskets now while the selection is good. Open 9 to 5 Monday through Saturday and 10 to 4 Sunday. Located on Selly Road, just off Colburn Culver. And remember, healthy plants for happy gardens are grown at the Flower Farm.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
KSPT 1400, KBFI 1450, North Idaho's radio.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. I have an idea. Why don't you all email me and tell me what my next intro song should be? Give me suggestions on that. It's commonlaw7b@gmail.com. The last segment here, I talked about creating a restaurant at the city beach, and we can actually turn that into some kind of a law talk. One thing that might prevent that would be what we call either a right of reverter or a basically a reverter. The only difference being one's automatic and one is not. One you have to exercise. And what that means is a good example is there's a school in Boise on Fairview Avenue, and it's on a piece of property that's worth an insane amount of money. For developers, you could build five elementary schools probably just by selling the thing, but they can't because the minute it ceases to be used for a school, then it reverts to the heirs of the people who donated it so long ago, probably at least 120 years ago. But there's heirs out there, and so they have to keep using it for a school. There is a way to change those things. You can do a there's a fancy Latin word for when you want to kind of change the point in a public gift like that, meaning that, you know, we want to modify it because it's for the public good to do so. And that's pretty hard to do. I think it's called cypre or something. That's a trust revision, but that would be one reason that would stop it. But if it wouldn't stop it, to be clear, I'm not saying the city should build the restaurant. The city gives whoever a 99-year lease and say, you build the restaurant. And that way, whoever builds the restaurant and has the lease, if they ever default on the lease, well, now the city owns the restaurant. And then they can just lease it out to somebody else. But anyway, just something to think about. What was I going to talk about next? Grand juries. They've been in the news a little bit lately. And I don't think people really understand them. I don't remember how much we've ever talked about criminal cases or stuff. I think I have, but when you have a felony type case, more serious criminal charge, then there's two ways to start the case going. And the first place is called a complaint and then an information. And that's not the first case, but the first way. A complaint is basically a charging document that alleges that, you know, basically we think there's probable cause, which is, you know, a low standard. It's not like guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, just probable cause to think maybe this person committed the crime. And so you file the complaint with the court. There may or may not be an arrest. You might just get summoned to show up. And then after you show up, ideally you get a lawyer. And then they will have this thing called a preliminary hearing. Now, those are conducted in front of magistrates, which is not below a district judge. They just have different jurisdiction. And if the magistrate, after hearing all the evidence, and the defendant gets to participate in this hearing, there are lawyers there, they can cross-examine witnesses, And if the magistrate thinks there's probable cause to think a crime is committed, they will, quote, bind you over for trial, which means now that there's a thing issued called an information, which formally actually charges you. You're not actually charged until that is issued. And criminal defense attorneys, we obviously prefer this process because we get to participate in the preliminary hearing. And to be prepared for a preliminary hearing, you want to be able to, you know, pick out obvious problems with what the people are saying. You don't necessarily want to cross-examine them too much because then you're playing your hand. You know, if they say something that you think is obviously just completely stupid and you can prove that, well, you don't tell them that then. You wait till you get to trial. Same thing when you do a deposition in a civil case. My clients are always madder than a wet hornet that why didn't you tell them this? That was BS. I'm like, I'm not going to do that now. We'll do that when we get to court. Well, that's kind of how a preliminary hearing is. And so you get a nice big transcript and you have prior testimony that you can use to impeach the witnesses in the criminal trial. So it's a much preferred procedure if you're a criminal defendant. Now, what's the other way to start a criminal felony case is called an indictment. Now, indictments aren't issued by anybody except a impaneled grand jury. So the process with the grand jury is that the prosecuting attorney has to impanel one and has to get the district judge, whoever, what jurisdiction, to sign off on impaneling this grand jury. And then once that happens, then the grand jury meets, just like any other jury, and the prosecutor can go in there and put on any witnesses he wants, make any arguments, everything else, do all that. He has subpoena power. She has subpoena power. And then they leave. And then the grand jury, just like any jury, deliberates and decides if there's probable cause to think that a crime was committed, you know, the specific crime they're trying to prove. And so in Idaho, as is typical with most grand juries, the defendant does not get to participate at all. They can get access to the transcript of what went on, but they don't get to participate or anything like that. And you do participate somewhat in preliminary hearings, clarify things to get them, you know, if they're stepping in the mud, you help them, you know, step into the deep part of the mud. Well, you can't do that in a grand jury. And so that's why you often hear the phrase, you can indict a ham sandwich. Because, you know, it's a totally one-sided presentation with a standard that is really low. So they almost always issue indictments. Now, not all states are the same. For example, in the state of New York, the defendant, actually the proposed defendant, I guess, the person who is being considered to be indicted, has the right to participate in the grand jury proceeding themselves. I don't think they have the right to cross-examine witnesses or all that. I didn't have a chance to look at it, but they get to go and put on their side of the story. And maybe they can call witnesses. If they can testify, I don't know why they couldn't have other people testify for them. I don't know about cross-examination. So why am I telling you all this? Well, because I think since we last talked, they indicted our ex-president, and I am just really sick of people talking about how the DA was the one driving the bus. No, the DA did decide to impanel the grand jury and present the evidence, but there were 23 people in New York who indicted Trump, not the DA. So yes, again, I know that a lot of you out there are just going to go, well, they were all in on it too. You know, when your answer for everything is everybody's in on it, well, then what's the point? I mean, you just believe whatever you want because, you know, if you're not going to listen to, you know, the likely facts, then, you know, I guess that's what you're going to do. But so, I mean, they got 23 people in on this scheme. You know, what'd they do, bribe them? And they kept them all quiet somehow that this whole nefarious thing was going on. And, you know, and some people I've said this to say, oh, well, it was in New York and they hate him there. I'm like, well, then he shouldn't have committed crimes there. How's that? But maybe they hate him, maybe they don't. But I wouldn't think that indicting an ex-president, the seriousness of doing that would be lost on these people. So, I mean, I know that, you know, you don't know, their deliberations are completely secret, but you know that was discussed. You know that somebody said, this could start a total shoot storm look at my filter go. But they did it anyway. And, you know, the evidence is pretty overwhelming. He's got 34 counts. If I were him, I would make a deal. I don't know the answer to this. I think I said last time I didn't know the answer, and I still haven't figured it out. I don't know that having a felony would even disqualify him from running for president. And I just don't know the answer to that. But either way, I wouldn't take it to trial. not with what I've seen. And then he's got more trouble coming down in Atlanta. That the gal down there just basically warned law enforcement that sometime, I think in June or July, she's going to announce something about that investigation in the grand jury in Georgia. And, you know, warning law enforcement there could be trouble. I highly doubt that if they don't indict him, there's going to be trouble. So I think we know what's coming there. And then all the rest of it, you know, who knows? He's just a huge distraction. And I don't understand why the Republicans are still behind him. And incidentally, you know how much I love hypocrisy. For these Republicans to stand up and say that somehow a district attorney is politicizing the law and using it to his own advantage, and we're a country of laws, not men. That's what chaps me. That last bit. We're a country of laws, not men. Unless the man happens to think that the lawfully issued subpoena from Congress is bogus, then that man can make the law that says I don't have to respond. And I'd say at least five or six of these people that were up there spouting this BS have ignored lawful subpoenas. The minute you don't have the subpoena power, folks, your economy is done. And I'm not exaggerating. I am not exaggerating at all. The minute you can't compel legal process to enforce the deals that you make with people, then you will not make any more deals. I mean, it's that simple. Our legal system is the only reason people put money into our country. And you start looking at making it look like certain people get to ignore it when they choose. Well, that's going to do nothing but hurt. So I don't care what you think about a lawfully issued subpoena, whether the whole thing's a witch hunt or whatever you want to call it. You respond to it, period, paragraph, end of story. And if you don't, well, then you're a traitor, because you're basically saying, I don't care what the laws of our country say. I'm going to do whatever I want. It doesn't really make you a traitor, but I kind of think it does. So anyway, that's what the grand jury process is. Don't get hung up on this DA did this. He convinced 23 people who obviously knew it was going to be a real scary thing to do, that it was still a good idea. So that's why I wanted to bring that up. One other thing occurred to me when I was talking about criminal indictments. Oh, and there's actually been cases, I was going to mention that where people have challenged the grand jury on the grounds that it's so unfair. And those are never successful. I mean, it's the grand jury's been around forever. I think it's from England's common law, and it just found our way into what we do here. But anyway, I think we're coming up close to our next break. I'll let you all go to the bathroom or do whatever you got to do, and we will be right back.
The Habitat for Humanity's very own Restore in Sandpoint has been a long-time go-to source for new and used building supplies, furniture, appliances, electrical, plumbing, windows, doors, and so much more. Everything you need for all your home building and remodeling projects. Prices are 50% lower or more than most retail outlets. Stop by the Restore in Sandpoint on Baldy Park Drive next to Miller's Country Store. Visit them at iphfh.org.
Spring is here, and it's time to see what's new at Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, ammo and knives, jewelry, ReadyWise foods, and more. They stock items you won't find anywhere else in our area. They buy, sell, and trade, open weekdays, and located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month. A savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
97.1 FM and 1450 AM, 1400 AM, North Idaho's radio.
Kamala, I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Hope you're again out there enjoying this, get a chance to enjoy this beautiful day. You know, one thing occurred to me is I should talk about new cases that I've picked up, because almost all of them have a lesson and have just kind of, we can use those as reminders, because really, folks, my goal here is to help you stay out of my office and anybody like me. Said it before, I'll say it again. We are a huge waste of money. You do not want to be involved with an attorney if you can avoid it. Now, do it on the front end. Don't hear me saying that. Because if you don't do it on the front end, you're guaranteed at some point you're going to do it on the back end. But that's the whole point in the show. And some of what my new cases demonstrate, you know, maybe if the person would have been listening, this wouldn't have happened. And one of them is a case where a gal owns a parcel of property, and she came up here with all her own money from her house, I think, in California. I know that's weird. Well, you know, in 2014, and she bought this piece and then owned it free and clear, and then decided she and the boyfriend she was with, and he was living there, decided they wanted to do something, more improvements, and so they wanted to borrow some money against the property. And so, some of you might know where this is going, because you've all done it yourself, I bet, and probably didn't know what you were doing. So, this case was a little different, because the lender, ordinarily what will happen is if you go into a bank, like if you borrow against a piece of property that's only in your name, but somebody's borrowing the money with you, for reasons that make no sense, the bank will make you put that person on the deed, right? Now, that's no big deal. All you got to do is a simultaneous transaction where the person you put on the deed executes an acknowledgement that they're only on the deed because the bank made them be on the deed and you didn't intend to give them half the equity in the property. I think I told you about the case where I had my client inherited 300 some thousand bucks and bought a house, you know, for cash. And then her boyfriend wasn't going to move in unless he was on the deed. And so whatever, I don't know what that, but anyway, so she finally says, fine, you can be on the deed. And so she's sitting there and the title company comes in with the deed, and the deed is from the seller to him and her. And she says, no, I need to be the first one in the list. So it'd be to her and him. So the title company takes the deed out and they X out his name and they type in hers. Well, that's practicing law. You can't do that. if you're not a lawyer, you can't prepare a deed for anybody but yourself. And but they do it all the time. And so what ended up happening is he ended up on the deed. We had a big, long fight for a lot of money over whether or not she intended to give him half the equity right out of the chute. But if, for example, if that had happened, if somebody had brought the question to me and said, hey, she wants to reverse the deed, can you change it? I would say, why? It doesn't make any difference who's first or second. That's not even relevant to anything. Why does she want? Well, because she's the one who's paying for it. I've been, well, wait a minute. This is not going to accomplish what I think she thinks it is. But that's what happened in this case. That little tangent was because the lender actually didn't require that he be on her deed, even if he was on the loan, which makes sense because all they really care about is the person who owns the property pledges it to pay the loan. And so then I looked at the thing, and well, the title company had prepared the deed. And so I haven't run it down yet, but I'm about 90% sure that the title officer just did it because that's what they always do with lenders. Is they just, she probably just assumed that that's what needed to be done. And so she created the deed and had my client sign it. And now my client's looking at potentially a whole bunch of money to get back her equity that she didn't ever intend to give this guy. And of course, he's taken the position that I have half of it, you know, no explanation for how he got a gift or anything else. So that the lesson is when you have property in your name, don't put anybody else on the deed unless you're intending to make a gift to them of half the equity. Or if you're intending to make some sort of a gift or something, you need to indicate what you're intending to give them. If you just stick them on a deed, well, I think if we finally have a case law out that says, based on my case somewhat, the one I just told you about, that says all the circumstances can be considered, meaning that if you can prove you're the one who paid for it, whatever, then you know we can adjust who owns what. Well, that's great. Considering all the circumstances buys Art a brand new truck. So the lesson there is don't put anybody on your deed unless you have a plan for how you're doing it and what that means to everybody. And there's a clear understanding and a written agreement to do so. And all that can be right in the deed, you know, not HOA stuff like how are we going to manage the property, but, you know, percentages and all that can be right in the deed. The other one I had is a construction defect case, which is, between those and my fraud cases in the last 3 years, fraud meaning the well doesn't work and you didn't tell me the well didn't work. And incidentally, I didn't even fly up here to look at the place before I decided to buy it. And yeah, I didn't actually order any tests either because I knew that I couldn't get another parcel because it was selling so quick. So that's what's driving that. But this construction defect case was, I think I probably 9 times out of 10, when the people are telling me their story, first thing they say is, well, I went with him because he was the cheapest. Well, that's not really a legal lesson for you all, but I can tell you that that is almost always the people who end up in my office. I mean, they do the bait and switch on you. They go cheap, and then they change everything. And one thing to look out with your construction contracts, I may have told you this, but if not, well, who cares if I did? It was probably a long time ago. We might have different listeners. There's two types of construction contracts. You can make them whatever you want. A contract's a contract, but most contractors really don't understand. They don't do that. They either do a thing called time and materials or they do cost plus. And here's where they get into big trouble, the contractors, is they call the contract cost plus, but then they stick in their labor rates. Right? So I'm billing out $50 an hour for this guy swinging a hammer as a framer. Well, $50 an hour is not the cost of that framer. The cost of the framer would be his hourly rate times roughly 1.33. So it would be that cost times 10%. That's what they're entitled to charge you. Well, what they do is they incorporate the time and then they charge you the 10% on top of the time. And then they're not good at discerning between the two. And you need to watch carefully for that because they'll say, well, you agreed to those rates. And I said, well, I had it happen once. It cost the contractor about $200,000 because it was a huge expensive house and they were doing it for 2 years. And the contractor's defense was, well, she agreed to pay those rates. I said, did you tell her that that was like 3 times more than your cost? Well, no. Well, then what do you think she would have said if you would have told her that when she's playing you cost plus 10%? So yeah, watch out for that. What was the other new one I have? Oh, the other new one was a emergency guardianship proceeding, and not really any lesson in that one, except that we've talked about mediation before, and we'll talk about it again. I mean, you and your siblings, if you're not getting along with what to do with mom or dad, you know, the first thing you do is get into a mediation. You don't need to know anything to get in there to mediate those kinds of cases. Most of my cases, you know, I got to figure out how much it's going to cost to fix the foundation before I can attempt to settle the case. But those kinds of cases can immediately settle. Another case, and I don't think I've ever talked about this, and I do get the question a lot. It's like, how can I protect my assets if this guy gets a big judgment against me? And the answer is you can't. I think maybe I've mentioned it, but you can't. So you need to get that idea out of your head. You can do your dangdest to try to do that, but eventually they're going to run it down, and then they're going to charge you a lot more money, and that's what this new case is about. It's called a Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, and basically the point of the act is to say that if you've been sued for $1 million, you can't sell your $1 million house to your son for $10, because we sue the son, we unwind the transaction to the extent necessary to pay the judgment we get against you. That's why you can't hide your assets. Especially if you already know about the claim, then you really can't do anything to protect anything from getting grabbed. And that's what this new case is about. And the problem I think that the other team in this case is going to have is they blew their expert deadline. Well, in a fraudulent transfer case, obviously I have to prove that you sold something for a lot less than it was worth. Right? Otherwise, it's not a fraudulent transfer. If I sell it for, you know, roughly equivalent value, that's a perfectly fine transaction. And you just got to run down the cash where I got it. You know, and if I've turned my house into a promissory note, well, then you grab the note, you know, one way or the other. Now, what was I telling you that for? I can't even remember. Oh, they don't have an expert. And so basically, you can't just say what you think something's worth. You can if you own it, but you can't if you don't. And so you have to have an expert come in and say, well, the tax assessed value does match approximately the encumbrance on the property, which means that if you just took over the loan, you're paying fair market value. Well, we all know, especially, you know, a few years back until they finally fixed things around here or broke them, depending on your opinion, tax assessed value was sometimes half of what it was actually worth. In my case, it was definitely that. Always just wanted to go to the assessors and say, I'm not complaining, but, you know, my house is worth about twice as much as you guys say it is. And then I think it was last year that they finally corrected all that. And the last case is another one that's a good lesson about cohabitation. And I'm not talking about whether it's a sin or not, but if you're living with somebody and you're romantically involved and you're buying things together, unless it's real property, that's different. But if you're buying boats and cars and things that have titles that are all personal property and things that don't have titles that are personal property, make sure you make a clear agreement. This poor gal lost, I don't know, probably 15 grand because this guy just took it all. I'm like, there's nothing I can do. So there's just no remedy. I mean, there is stuff with a title you can do something with, but anyway, I think we're just about wrapping it up here on Common Law. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a wonderful next 4 weeks and the weather continues to cooperate. I myself am not holding out any hope at all. I'm not putting my plants out until the end of June this year. But anyway, we'll be back in a month. And again, email me if you have a suggestion for my intro song or you have a question. It is commonlaw7B@gmail.com, and thank you for listening.